Today I'm going to talk about variable rate fertilizer application for desert vegetables. I'm going to focus on phosphorus, and there's some specific reasons I focused on phosphorus initially, although we're beginning to move into nitrogen, variable rate nitrogen management as well. Of course, there's concerns about world pea reserves are declining fairly rapidly. Some have estimated that we only have 4 decades of phosphorus reserves left. That's probably an underestimate. We probably have 300 or 400 years, because as ores we're currently mining, as the price goes up, the ores that we're passing over will become profitable. Nevertheless, 30 years or 1,000 years, it doesn't matter, because phosphorus, the phosphorus cycle takes tens to hundreds of millions of years. Phosphorus moves through our streams and rivers into the depths of our oceans, and ultimately it's only redeposited on land masses through geological processes like tectonic uplift. So we do have a problem. We are moving through our phosphorus reserves at certainly a much higher rate than nature is going to turn them around. Of course, there's the perpetual concerns about phosphorus and surface waters and its tendency to hasten eutrophication processes. And perhaps more important in the short run, relative to the phosphorus cycle, is the geopolitical stratification of our pea reserves. It's more concentrated in fewer countries than even the fossil fuels, which cause a lot of geopolitical issues in our world. We've taken on a multi-pronged strategy. Of course, we've looked at phosphorus placement. We've looked at altering fertilizer technologies. I've even went and did a sabbatical in a molecular biology laboratory where we're beginning to look at genetic modification for improved pea use efficiency. And cognizant that the public is not going to readily accept GMO food, we're beginning to pursue a traditional path on screening recombinant inbred lines to identify a traditional path towards improved phosphorus use efficiency. But today we're going to focus on soil testing, and specifically variable rate managed soil testing. Now here's some data I've collected across the desert in the southwestern United States. This shows a typical relationship between lettuce yield, and I'm using lettuce as an example because it's our most important economic crop, although we grow broccoli, cauliflower, onions, spinach. And you can see the relationship between soil test P and lettuce in our soils. As the soil test P levels drop below 35, the response to phosphorus is quite dramatic. In fact, lettuce uses substantial amounts of fertilizer phosphorus. At low P levels, low soil test P, low sodium bicarbonate P, we recommend the growers apply 550 pounds of monoammonium phosphate, which is over 110 kilograms of elemental P. So lettuce shows a large response to P. So it's a natural focus crop in some of our initial studies. Here's our typical recommendations. Most of our growers are using monoammonium phosphate. Not all of them. I have different sets for different products. And you can see the recommendations we make. Now, I don't know how familiar you are with the produce culture, but in most cases, the growers don't own the crop. The crops are owned by a shipper, be it Dole or TNA or one of the shippers. And all the shippers have production coordinators. And they go around and making sure the growers do certain things. So in many cases, the growers aren't using soil tests at all. They're always applying 550 pounds of monoammonium phosphate to the acre for lettuce. Some use soil tests, many do not. And this is a culture because of the relationship between the shippers and the growers. Now, this is some work Dr. Kurt Nolte and I did about 4 years ago. It was a precursor to the work I was going to talk about today. I was not a big advocate of variable rate fertilizer management. I figured we could go take some high resolution soil samples and we could statistically figure out how to take a representative sample from a production unit. Here's a 40 acre production unit, and you can see the range in phosphorus tests that we got across this field. And this is one of the better ones. This, at least, they're normally distributed. Usually that wasn't the case. Here's some other fields. You can see they're not normally distributed, and you can see the range in phosphorus levels across a given production unit. Here's some more. We can go on, and you can see that there's quite a bit of range in how a given lettuce field will test if you take high-resolution samples. Reluctantly, I finally came to the conclusion that the only way we could use soil tests with the utmost efficacy was to go towards a variable rate application program. But this is expensive research. We'd have to take yields, we'd have to develop yield monitors, and initially I didn't have the funding. But we eventually obtained the funding, again, more fields. I don't know how many of these I put, but I think I've made the point that these are all lettuce production fields, and you can see the kind of noise and soil test P levels within a production unit. So you can see the propensity for a grower to over-fertilize and under-fertilize vast parts of the field if you use a composite soil test sample. We did some hypothetical calculations before we began our work, and this just shows the area percent of fields under-fertilized by the more than 50 pounds map per acre. This is by more than 100 per acre. And this would be based on a composite soil test. If you take the composite of the whole production unit, this would be a 5-acre resolution sampling. And you can see in both cases, vast portions of the field would be under-fertilized. This is estimated area of field over-fertilized by 50 and 100 pounds per acre map. And again, you can see vast. This would be the grower standard practice of 550, although I've got some of them away from that. Some are using soil tests now. And you can see a composite soil test, and you can see a 5-acre resolution grid sampling compared to a 1-acre resolution grid sample. And this would be the estimated economic returns to a variable rate program. And in this, I factored in the cost of the sampling, the cost of the variable rate applicator, everything. And this is interesting. In almost every case, it pays out except when the soil tests are below 10. In those cases, when the soil test soil bicarbonate levels are below 10, the cost of the fertilizer is, you need the fertilizer, and the cost of the sampling and variable rate application don't pencil out against that fertilizer you needed. But when the soil tests are above 10, you always, always made out economically to a variable rate phosphorus application program. So again, we finally got funding. Let me see. This slide's not working. That's okay. We finally got funding to test it at the field level. And this is a tricky business because you're asking producers to take risks with you. And that's not always easy to do. So what I try to do is minimize the cultural change to them. If they use MAP, I use MAP. If they use a liquid phosphorus fertilizer, 335O, some do that, I use that. If they use phosphoric acid, I use that. We tried to minimize what we did to them, and I asked them for a production block. And a third of that production block I managed based on a grid sampling-based program. A third I managed on a zone sampling-based program, and I'll explain those here shortly. And a third I let them do what they normally do. And these are some of our grower cooperators. We work in Southern California and Central and Southwestern Arizona. And again, to the grower standard practice, we compared a grid-based sampling scheme to a zone-based sampling scheme. In the zone, we selected our zone based on statistical analysis from a conductance survey. This shows a typical grid sampling scheme. This was in the Coachella Valley of California. This was a broccoli field. And you can see we took the samples just in a straight grid. Now, to zone-based, my colleague, Dr. Andrade, likes the Veris. I like the E of 38. So as a compromise, we use both. Actually, they give us very similar data, only the E of 38 gives much higher resolution data. And isn't as sensitive to soil moisture or surface rough conditions. So we use both, and we have management packages for whatever a given producer might choose to use. Again, this just shows how we survey a field to drive our zone-based sampling program. And this would be a typical zone-based sampling program. We use a statistical package called ESAP, developed by the Salinas Laboratory in California. It essentially uses a central composite rotatable design where it tries to maximize not only the difference in the absolute values of the readings, but the differences in space. So concurrently, you want to maximize the space between the samples, but you want to also maximize the difference in the absolute values of the conductance. So this would be a typical grid-based sampling scheme. This is the same field in the Coachella Valley. Right next to this part was sampled by zone, this part was sampled by grid, and from here on would be the grower standard practice. This would be a bigger field than we normally need. In fact, I just took yield on an equal third. This would be a different planting date of broccoli. Here shows the ESAP readings, that's the conductance, based on either the Veris or the EM38. And you can see the interpolated conductance values. And then using these values, we correlate it to the phosphorus test, and we generate a prescription map. This would be the soil test P parts per million. And of course, the prescription map would be an inverse image of this based on an algorithm, a soil testing algorithm that I developed many years ago. This would be the prescription map here. This would be the rates. In this case, it would be the rates of a 335.0. This is what this grower used per acre to achieve the results we wanted in terms of phosphorus nutrition. We had to develop different types of equipment. Like I said, some growers use liquid, some use dry. This is the liquid applicator we developed to apply liquid phosphate fertilizer in a variable rate pattern across the field. This is another equipment. This is if some growers are spraying the phosphate on the surface and disking it in. Many do this as well. We've developed the equipment to do that. You can see some of the onboard tractor equipment, how we use this equipment. This is a dry applicator we use. Most of the growers in Yuma use monoammonium phosphate. And some apply it on listed beds like this and power mulch it into the bed. Some band it. And of course, we had options to do either one. But again, we want to minimize the cultural change we were imposing on the grower. We were going to do whatever he did, only on our grid and zone-based portions of the field, we were going to put it in a variable rate fashion based on our prescription algorithms. Now, you've got to close the loop. It's one thing to have your prescription map, and it's one thing to say you're going to apply like that. So we also have the equipment to actually generate as applied. And again, verify that indeed we achieved the rates that we applied, the variable rates that we intended. And we have done that. Now, there have been significant challenges, and I want to mention some of those because they aren't trivial. One is the grower-shipper coordination. In many cases, the grower is the grower, but the shipper owns the crop. So the grower doesn't even sometimes know when they're going to go in and get the crop. But one of the worst situations I encountered was one of the growers, one production block, he sold part of it to TNA, part of it to Dole, part of it to Fresh Express. So this is a real dilemma for me because one shipper was going to harvest before the other two, and I needed all my data at the same time. So I had to go actually in and cut these by hand on a half-acre resolution. But grower-shipper coordination is certainly important. The harvest machines. How many harvest machines is a grower going to deploy? In some cases, they only sent one harvest machine into a field, and I tooled up one. In some cases, they sent up to five. So I had to have GPS and Campbell data loggers for every one of those lettuce harvest machines. And I had to deploy the people to man those machines while harvest was going. So this is, you got to coordinate again, and you got to deploy the right amount of people and instrument as many machines as they're going to use. You never know this. It depends. The shipper owns several fields around the area. So on one day, he may have two machines in that field, three in that, two in another. And when he finishes that, he may move more into the field you're working in. So you've got to be poised to retool more machines. Another problem is crop maturity. Vegetables aren't like grain and cotton. That crop changes every day. So sometimes it took us a week to harvest the field. So they start, and they're moving machines through the field, and they're cutting lettuce. The next day, some of those lettuce heads are bigger, and more are going in the box than are being thrown back on the ground or not being cut at all. And then by the end of the week, maybe a lot more are being thrown on the ground because the lettuce has passed its peak maturity. So this is a real issue that can confound yield data acquisition. And I think in some cases when the harvest is going to take more than 3 to 4 days, we're going to have to go in and cut by hand on a lower resolution as a covariate because this has been a problem. I had a broccoli field in 2014, 2015. They only put one machine in the field. So we were, I had a crew out there, a three-man crew, I shifted them out in and out, over 2 weeks, just riding that same machine back and forth across that field. So crop maturity is an issue. Again, we don't have the luxury that they do with the cereal grains and cotton, that the crop is static and doesn't change over the harvest period. We've tried different types of yield monitoring devices, and we're still playing with many. Of course, we have our GPS that we put on all of them. We've used laser screens. This works pretty good. We use this for broccoli. They toss the broccoli into the pan. We have a crew sitting here boxing it up. The only problem with this is if, just by coincidence, two of the cutters throw a broccoli in at the same time, it'll count it as one. And that's 2 crowns of broccoli. Another one is we put cameras, and we can count the boxes going across the conveyor belt before they're loaded onto the truck. And you have the packers over here packing all the boxes. And this works pretty good. There is some error here if they don't keep this green pack. And some boxers are better than others. So there is a potential for 5% error here. What we've done in our data acquisition is we're testing these, and they'll probably be in the end good enough for producers, but they're not good enough for us. So I always had people on the machines with a clicker counting the boxes, and it was concurrently collated with a timestamp and a GPS coordinate. Here's some of the typical data. This is one of the broccoli fields in the Coachella Valley. This end was our grid sample. Here was our zone, and this was the grower standard practice. You can see some of the yield. In this field, we did a little better than the grower practice. That wasn't always the case. Although we've never done worse than the grower practice, we've done the same with a lot less phosphate fertilizer. Here's some of the yield comparisons. This is grid and zone based compared to the grower practice, which is a dashed line. And you can see some of the noise in the data. But we perform similarly, more or less, but with a lot less phosphate fertilizer. Here's another one. This is romaine lettuce in the Yuma area. This one may have been statistically better, this grid-based sampling scheme, than the zone and the grower standard practice. Because of time, I didn't include too many of these. Again, what we can conclude from this site, this was iceberg lettuce in Bard, California, we were similar to the grower practice. I don't think that this was statistically different. But we did this, we achieved this with a lot less phosphate fertilizer. So to draw up some conclusions, significant pea fertilizer savings are feasible with this variable rate technology. We've integrated our equipment. This is an ongoing project. We're in the second year of a 3-year project. We're still trying to optimize our sampling protocols, our sensor-based algorithms, and ultimately all this data will be subjected to a rigorous economic analysis. I'd like to thank some of the growers that humored us and took this risk with us, as well as the California Fertilizer Checkoff Program, which funded this work. I'll answer any questions if anyone has any. Okay, well, we'll move on to the next speaker.